It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, hello. Good morning. Good morning. Hello. Hello. Trying to remember how to do this. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm.
We're on the air.
We're on
the
air.
That's all that matters.
Hotkeys on and up. Hotkeys are my buttons. There we go.
We're good to go.
It's Wednesday. It's August 20th. So a couple housekeeping notes up top here. A very big shout out to my mom.
Oh.
It is her birthday today. Hey. Happy birthday to my mom.
I like your mom.
Same. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan of hers.
Yeah, I like your dad too. They're cool people.
I've got I got very, very fortunate with my folks. I love them very much. So, mom, happy birthday. Hope you're listening. They listen every day. I'm pretty sure she's listening.
Do they listen every day?
All yeah. Day? All right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I need to get them a meter.
Seriously. Well, yeah, so the folks are P1s for sure, and anything they don't listen to, they always go back and either rewatch or re-listen. So, salute. She'll hear this eventually.
All right.
If not right now, at some point during the day, I'm sure she will hear it. If not, mom, I'll see you at dinner tonight and I'll tell you again tonight.
There you go.
That's James. I'm Kyle. Salute to Jesse. Really appreciate Jesse for filling in the last few days. I took Friday off for my birthday. I went down to South Bay. Had a great time. I went to my first ever live professional soccer match.
Oh, yeah. You told us that.
Yeah,
how was it?
It was great. It was the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League. It was Bay FC against the San Diego Wave. Bay FC lost 2-1.
Okay.
But man, it was beautiful. Just right. It was a great time. PayPal Park was a really cool venue. We were row 23, which felt really high up because there's only one deck. There's a row of like field level suites.
Okay.
All the way around, and then there's a second level that just goes up, and that's the full stadium. And so we're row 23, and it feels like you're walking so long to get up to row 23. But then you turn around, and because of this, how steep it is, the field's right there.
Oh, yeah.
You are not far. There's not a bad seat in that place. So, no, it was really cool. It was really, really fun. I enjoy soccer very much. It's just one of those things that I can't fit into my regular sports watching diet.
Yeah, it's, just adding stuff?
Yeah, that's tough for me. So I want to try and do that more. If you get a chance, or if you're looking for something to do, and you want to get out to a Bay FC game down in San Jose, I know it's a trek from Sacramento, but I very much recommend it. It was a very good. They got a ton of food trucks out there, good
sweet.
Beer options. The merch is all really cool. So,
yeah, because you didn't go with us to the Republic.
To the Republic game, I did not. I've been to a Republic game.
I've been to a handful of Republic games.
This is my second professional soccer match. I went to a Republic game several years ago as part of my birthday as well. We did the beer train.
Oh, okay.
I hit a Republic game. It was great.
Yeah. I like hitting soccer live every once in a while.
Totally.
And I do watch a lot of soccer, whether it's on TV during the weekends or once the soccer season kicks up and I'm out watching my sons play slash coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a big live soccer guy.
I do, and yeah, I've earned plenty of yellow card from the stands.
I didn't do that the other night. I was just I was wading into my Bay FC fandom until I know all the players. I'm not gonna get too wrapped up in it.
You know, I didn't think about this before, but I like what do they do about hecklers in soccer like that in
probably
professional?
Nothing. There was one girl who on the San Diego Wave. Who flopped big time.
Oh, yeah.
Like during Bay FC has this build up for this for a shot on goal. And during the ball gets into the box and there's some jockeying for position and stuff, and one girl just flails and falls down, gets the whistle. So every time she would get the ball, it was boos throughout the park.
Oh, nice.
It was great. It was really cool. Just everybody picked up on it right away.
Man, I wish I could do that in high school soccer.
Boo! This one guy.
Well, that's soccer awesome. Is not like high school football. Like the people who show up to a high school soccer game
are the parents and
they,
some friends maybe
maybe but not really
totally
like there might be a small group of people that that are students, but realistically, there's not a bunch of people there.
Yeah.
So when you're yelling, like, it's not hard to pick out whose voice
everybody
it is.
Hears it. Yeah.
Especially when it's the same high school reps every time, and they know exactly who you are at this point. It's like, oh, great.
Like, oh, God, gotta go ref the Ham game.
Yeah.
Careful. Yeah, man. That's what, yeah, we had a good time out of the Bay FC match. Nobody got a yellow card. Well, players got yellow cards.
Yeah.
Nobody in the stands did anything egregious and had a great time. It is also on August 20th, 2025. It is National Radio Day.
It is.
It's really cool, man. I know that we are on the digital side quite a bit with the Odyssey app, the iHeart app, the TuneIn app, YouTube and Twitch. So I know that the term radio has gotten, it's changed over the last decade or so.
Yeah.
And it's still like, I know that not everybody is jumping in their car and turning on the radio as much anymore. They do go to apps or they listen or watch on YouTube or whatever, but it's still just such a cool thing for me personally, because this is what I chose. Sac State, because they had the student radio station that they had and the opportunities that gave me, broadcasting games, broadcasting shows. And then I got really lucky when I was there, because it starts out, you get 1 hour at KSSU, the Sac State station, you get a 1 hour show.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to a certain point, you do X amount of volunteer hours, whatever it was, you got to have 2 hours. And I got really lucky. For the old head Sacramento media people, you'll remember Nate Goodyear, who was on the other station here in town for a while. And Nate and I worked really closely together, and we would just put our shows back to back. So he and I would do a 4 hour show, and our buddy Jordan would come in, our buddy Barge would come in. It was just such a fun atmosphere. And the fact that, you know, through this winding path I've gotten here, where I get to do a show that I enjoy every single day still, is really cool. And that's, thanks to radio as much as, you know, it is to the digital side. So, salute to everybody listening on 1320 AM and 98.5 FM HD2.
Yeah, I'm new to radio.
You
like
are.
It's only been like 2 years that I've been, you
almost
know, we've
exactly.
had our own show. Yeah, it's almost exactly 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, I mean, I would go on, you know, whether it was with D-Lo and Casey and do hits with them,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, back in the good old days, I'd go in studio with Mark Kreidler and Whitey mm-hmm. Gleason. And
you're just talking to Jonathan about that.
Yeah, the Rise guys when they were on ESPN 1320. It was always fun. I enjoy radio. It's different. And as somebody who's had a podcast for like, I don't know, 14 years, mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you have to be different in every like sort of like medium that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And even like our shows, like I feel like I'm asked to be something different when I come on with D-Lo and Casey or our show, or like when I'm running the show, when you're not here, it's cool. It's you've got to kind of keep your mind straight as what you've said where,
mm-hmm.
but outside of that, I like it. I think it's a cool way to storytell.
Hell yeah. So salute to everybody listens to the radio and listens to this show or watches this show. We appreciate you all very, very much, because we wouldn't get to do this if not for you. So thank you from James and me and everybody here at ESPN 1320 on National Radio Day. All right. August 20th is also day 45.
Kuminga Watch.
Hell yeah. So there's no news on this.
We say that every day and then we have news.
No, it's not. No. Because I think there's an important distinction between we have news and we have a different way to talk about this thing.
Yeah, analysis or whatever. Somebody said something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is indirectly related to Kuminga Watch. And this is Marquese Chriss, former Phoenix Sun, spent some time with the Warriors and I think would have wound up playing a lot for the Warriors in 2021 and 2022 had he not broken his leg.
Yeah, Sacramento native.
Sacramento native, right.
Yeah.
And didn't the Kings draft him?
He was drafted. They traded the draft rights for him for the 13th pick with Yorgos Papionis, and the 28th pick, which was Scalabissier. Shout out Scal.
Scal, who signed with Washington.
Yeah. And then the draft rights to Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bogey.
Worked out for them.
Big Bogey guy. All right, so big bogey guy. That also goes for me on the golf course. So this is Marquise Chris talking about the Warriors offense and playing for Golden State, and specifically how he felt their offense impacted him.
And then just getting to practice, like, I seen some of the craziest stuff, man. Like, seeing Steph fall down, stand up, and, like, throw it up. Look like he just throwing the ball at the rim, go in, slip and slide. During, like, it's crazy, bro. Like,
so it was like NBA Street.
But it was fun. Like, just it was real basketball, you know what I mean? Like, just the fluidity of it and, like, not having to call plays, but everybody knew what we were doing. We're going to run an away action. But after we run this, we're free. Yeah. We're doing whatever we do, but let's read off each other. And it was just so simple. Like, you look at their offense, you're like, oh, it might be difficult. It might be that. It's just they're playing basketball. If you're standing, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You should be screening for somebody. You should be passing to somebody. You should be cutting. I think, like I said, it simplified the game for me and for everybody else. So it's like there really was no mistakes because all you're doing is just playing. And if you do make a mistake, just keep playing.
Yeah.
Like, just fix it. And then
I thought that was really enlightening insofar as Jonathan Kuminga not being able to carve out a role in the Warriors offense.
Yeah.
Marquise Chris just described it as they're just playing basketball. And if you can't figure out how to fit into a system where they're just playing basketball, I have deep concerns about your ability to fit into any system.
No, I get the sentiment completely because, like, look, what they're doing is they're running a flow offense where everything is just read and react, right?
Yep.
It's all predicated not off of plays.
Mm-hmm.
It's predicated off of moving to space. Mm-hmm. And then I think the one thing that is really tough though for young players, especially a young player who did not go to college, who didn't go through sort of the college experience, he went straight to the G League and then thrust right into the, you know, into a great team. It's that you sometimes you don't have the feel yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And sometimes you'll never have the feel, but
sure.
I kind of look at it the same way, like sort of the reverse of the way we look at Davion Mitchell, right? Davion Mitchell is not a flow offense guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a straight up pick and roll guy. He definitely likes the ball in his hands. Like there's specific things that he does on a basketball court that he's really good at and mm-hmm. that certain teams run in the NBA. But then there's a lot of teams that do this flow thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I get that some players like stand out that they just don't get it, but it's also sort of the way they're brought up in the game. And eventually if you just continuously don't get it, you're always going to be sort of an outlier no matter what team you're on. And that's where you're hoping that Kuminga starts to figure it out.
Mm.
But I'll point this out. Kuminga isn't the only one who struggled with this in Golden State.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He is. That is not unique to Jonathan Kuminga, for sure.
No, but I think it does take a certain tier of basketball understanding, basketball IQ, to play within that system because it does end up being just completely like organic and you're reading and reacting and like reading just the most subtle cues from the players that you're around and guys that have been there forever, they instantly get it. And then guys who have been in the league forever and have played in systems like this before, they get to Golden State and they're like, oh my gosh, I've done this before, but now I'm surrounded by some of the greatest players who have ever played and like watching Steph shoot from wherever, it just creates a different element. I don't know that we can like point at a player and say, hey, it's your fault. You don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand because even like Marquise Chris is the one who's talking here. I don't think Marquise Chris ever fully grasped what was happening either. And, you know, I've talked like.
Sure. Yeah. He didn't have like a long career.
He did not have a long career and he did not have a long career with Golden State Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like I remember Willie Cauley-Stein, the first season that he played for the Kings, like read and react. Well, I mean, they did dribble drive motion offense,
mm-hmm.
which he was very, very familiar with. Vance Wahlberg had designed that at I think Clovis in Fresno. And then John Calipari picked it up. And then next thing you know, it's something that Kentucky runs. And then it's something George Karl runs, right? So when Willie was doing like his rookie season, he was just running wherever he thought he was supposed to go, and he had no idea what he was doing. He knew where he was supposed to go, but he never understood why he was supposed to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that was the biggest thing. When he came to Media Day in his second year, he's like, I had time to decompress. I had time to watch film, and then I started to understand why it is that I'm going where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like this season, that's what's different about coming into year two. Is it when they say, hey, we need you to sprint to the corner. You're like, okay, so you sprint to the corner. But the whole time you're sprinting to the corner, you have no idea why you're doing what you're doing.
Sure.
And I think that, like, eventually you should start picking up on the why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where Kuminga has had problems.
I agree.
He doesn't quite get the why, mm-hmm. and he wants the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the way the NBA works.
And that's it. I don't think that you can I don't think that you can put together a successful NBA offense centered around one person dribbling the air out of the ball anymore. That might have worked in 2000, 2001, 2002.
Yeah.
That was the style of play. But I think if you're doing that and that's your offense, is give it to Jonathan Kuminga or DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine or Domantas Sabonis or Keegan Murray, or pick a player and get out of the way, that's not conducive to winning in this sport anymore. And to me, if Kuminga was not figuring it out in Golden State,
mm-hmm.
where it is as democratic of an offense as there is, where you do have an opportunity, a player of his size, athleticism, and just kind of overall skill set, like, you were going to get your shots. It wasn't like Golden State was saying, we only want you to shoot five times a game. It's like, no, we want you to play within the construct of the offense. And he wouldn't, couldn't, I don't know. I'm not in the guy's head.
Yeah.
But it does give me a lot of pause when it comes to, okay, you're going to bring this guy in because you want to establish a culture and you're trying to establish this offense. And if you're trading a pick and a player and paying this guy, and you're trying to establish this offense, you're Doug Christie, and you're like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to shoot this many threes. We're going to have this type of motion. We're going to have these kind of actions. This guy's going to screen. That guy's going to screen. And Kuminga's like, nope, when I get the ball, clear out. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
It didn't work in Golden State. It wouldn't work with the Kings. It wouldn't work with Houston or Washington or pick a team. I have deep concerns about it being phrased the way Marquise Chris put it, where it's like, yeah, it's just playing basketball.
Yeah.
That's a little worrisome for me.
I think that there is a larger worry here that we can hit after the break, to be honest with you. Like, I think that, like, this, there is something that he needs to figure out, because there are players that play that way still,
mm-hmm.
and he's not one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We'll continue talking about this. We've got a ton of NFL stuff to get into today as well. I think Josh Allen has ruined quarterbacking, or at least quarterback evaluation. We'll talk about that. We'll continue this Jonathan Kuminga discussion here on ESPN 1320. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, Sacramento Sports Leader. Okay, get me out.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James is there. I'm Kyle. Joe Brazil on assignment. We're hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. Hey, do you have that? Can you reach that paper there?
Oh.
This sorry. Paper. This segment of NBA Talk on ESPN 1320 is brought to you by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live. Here we go. I'm going to re-rack that. We'll fix it in post. 3, 2, and 1. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. That's something that's different between radio shows and podcasts. If I had botched the read like that on a podcast, I would have said, hey, we'll cut that out and we'll restart that here. Hang on. Watch. That's how that would have gone. And then we would have edited it.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have never known that I stumbled through the read.
All right.
But because we're doing it live, you all heard me mess that up.
I didn't hear anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
My mistakes have been bared unto you. We're talking about something Marquise Chris said on a podcast appearance where he talks about the Warriors offense and how they don't run a lot of plays. They run an action, and then after they run that action, you're just playing basketball. Read and react. Flow offense.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that in relation to Jonathan Kuminga and why Jonathan Kuminga has not been able to figure out how to play within that offense, and if that is a potential problem for his future development. we're talking about ISO ball and how you can't do that as much anymore. And you were going to make a point before I rudely interrupted you and sent us to commercials.
Well, of course, I knew you had to go to commercial. I think the problem is that there are players in the league right now that do exactly what Jonathan Kuminga would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up the Orlando Magic and Paolo Banchero, right? There's LeBron James, who does exactly what we're talking about. There is Luka Doncic, who does exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. A lot of guys who are literally in the MVP balloting race
sure.
every season, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is that they do something that Kuminga just has not shown the propensity to do at all, and that is create for others.
Playmake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he can playmake for himself.
He can score.
But he cannot, as of right now, he has not shown the ability to playmake for others. And if mm-hmm. you're going to be a guy with a usage rate over 27, almost 28% usage rate,
yep.
that is extremely high.
Yep.
Like it's higher, way higher than Malik Monk.
Yep.
Right. If you're going to be that guy, then you have got to average more than two or three assists per game. Yep. And it just shows it like it really is. Guys like Cam Thomas, guys like Jonathan Kuminga, they're guys who just think that they get to do whatever they want on the court. And until they learn that that's not that's fine for you and your stats and maybe getting paid, mm-hmm. it's not good for winning basketball. It's not what leads to victories, which is the reason you play the game.
Yeah.
So until he learns that, but I'll say this, he's never been able to be a focal point like that. Only in small doses. And when he does, he's a great scorer. But you have to show that there's more to your game and that you can improve other people.
He had a usage rate last season of... Did he even qualify on the leaderboard here? I don't think he did. Where is he? I have a point to make. Stand by.
Yeah.
He had a usage rate of like 27% last year, I think.
Yeah.
Can you confirm that's right?
His usage rate last season was...
He didn't qualify
27.4.
So 27.4. Okay, perfect. And what was his assist rate?
His assist rate was 14.6.
Okay. Karl Anthony Towns had that exact same usage rate and an assist rate of 13.8.
Okay.
That's Karl Anthony Towns. Kyrie Irving had that exact same usage rate, 20.5% assist rate. Jalen Williams, 23.4. Dame, 29.7. Miles Bridges, these guys all have higher usage rates. And these are their assist rates. 21.7. Tyler Hero, 28 usage rate. 26.2. Like these are the type of players who are, they have the ball in their hands a lot. Mm-hmm. And you don't think of Tyler Hero as like a crazy assist man. But he's still at a 26.2% assist rate.
Yeah.
You start going lower than that. Jalen Green is at 16. CJ McCollum, 20.6. Darius Garland, 32.2. Scotty Barnes, 27.7.
Assist rate?
Assist rate.
And what's
assist
his percentage. Usage?
And that's an estimate of the percentage of teammate field goals a player assisted while they were on the floor. Scotty Barnes with a 27.7% assist rate is at a 27 usage rate.
Yeah. So.
Like this is what, so it's just about, it's. The scoring is important. Putting the ball in the basket is the point of the sport. And Jonathan Kuminga does that exceedingly well.
Yep.
And I think if he was put in a position to, let's say Steph Curry and Draymond Green say, hey, we're going to quit. We're done playing basketball. And the Warriors go, pivot. Here's a contract. Here's 4-130 for Kuminga. You're the guy now. I have no doubt he would average 20-plus a night.
I don't have any doubt either.
I have, like, there is no question in my mind he would average 22, 23, maybe more.
Yeah, I think 22, 23 is like the baseline. Like right. even if he were to join the Kings and they were to clear out one more score,
mm-hmm.
I think he would instantly be over 20 points per game in his first year in Sacramento.
Right, but I think you'd see an assist rate probably at 13 or 14%. And when you're getting the ball and your only impact on the offense is when you get it and you get the opportunity to shoot it, you're going to shoot it. It's really hard to impact a defense.
Yeah.
The Warriors, when they would play James Harden or Russell Westbrook at their peak, they've talked about how they liked playing those guys because they know exactly how it's going to go.
Yeah.
There's no question about Harden's going to drive. He's going to try and draw a foul. He'll assist here and there. Because I think he averaged 10 assists one year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to assist, but he knows he's going to look to score it first. Russell Westbrook, same deal. You know exactly what you're going to get.
Yep.
And I think in the modern NBA, with defenses as creative and as versatile as they are, and with opposing offenses moving the ball the way they do, I think it's really, really difficult to win games when your primary ball handler is not a playmaker.
Yeah, totally. And I would say this too, like old school Kings fans, I'm going to bring up a name that realistically I think fits kind of this mold. The Kings traded for Antoine Carr back in during the 89-90 season.
Mm-hmm.
And in his second season with the Kings, he ended up averaging 20 points per game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy who had never averaged 20 a game before that, and then never really averaged 20 a game after that, right? But the reason I bring this up is his usage in the year that he went for 20, his usage was 27.2, and his assist rate was 14.1.
And who's this?
This is Antoine Carr.
Okay.
Is that not like spot on? 27.2 and 14.1?
Same guy.
Yeah. The problem is that the 90-91 Kings went 25-57.
Well,
that's what the leading scorer on a bad team looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can't make your teammates better and you just think it's about you getting yours, you're not going to, you might get paid. You might, you know, win even a scoring title,
mm-hmm.
but you're not going to win games. And that's the problem.
Here are all the guys. Kyle Kuzma, 24 usage rate, 12.1% assist rate. Andrew Wiggins, 24.5 usage rate, 13.5% assist rate. Alex Saar, the rookie in Washington, 23.5 usage, 13.9 assist.
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns is the one outlier there. But nobody thinks that Karl Anthony Towns is some kind of great playmaker off the bounce. He's just a really good shooter.
Yeah.
A very good scorer. But I think there's something to be said for that with Kuminga.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things, and I think it's one of the things that gives the Kings pause. We were talking about with Kenny on the handoff yesterday, we were talking about the idea of trading Keon Ellis in this deal. If Keon Ellis doesn't want to be here and you can go get Jonathan Kuminga and something else and a deal that includes Keon Ellis, you got to go do it. It's like, I understand why the Kings wouldn't want to go there because I think there are still some very serious question marks. And again, question marks. It's not Kuminga can't be a better playmaker, a better distributor. It's not that he can't impact winning. It's, hey, we don't know if he does.
Yeah.
We don't know if this is a guy who becomes not this level of player, but becomes Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, where he has the ball in his hands, but he's also keeping his teammates involved, distributing. Or is he Kyle Kuzma? Okay, yeah, he's going to get his points, but to what end?
Yeah, and when you add in, you know, the fact that he's not a consistent rebounder, that he's not a consistent defender. Like, there are major red flags here.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest problem is that while he's 22 years old, he's got 4 years NBA experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're worried. That's why playing a fifth season on a qualifying offer is a very, very risky proposition for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he gets done with this year, a lot of teams around the league are going to be going to look at him and say, look, you are the exact same player that you were before.
Mm-hmm.
You are the exact same. You have not grown as a player unless you can start checking other boxes.
Yep.
And making yourself into a more well-rounded player, then there's no reason for us to gamble on you. Like, you can go get a scorer in Cam Thomas right now that just puts up a ton of points,
mm-hmm.
has a heavy usage rate, a low assist rate, and just goes around and chucks shots up all the time. He's on a bad team, and he's going to continue to be on bad teams because it's just not an efficient way to run a basketball team. And, you know, I'm not saying Kuminga is that yet, but we're entering that place where, like, he has to show more of his game, like, very quickly, and more of his ability to make those around him better.
Cam Thomas, 32.6 usage rate, 22.9 assist rate.
Way better.
Just, and again, this is, we're stripping context a little bit here.
Yeah, yeah.
And just using assist rate, that's understood. Like, that's baked into the conversation. And assist rate, again, is an estimate of the percentage of teammate field goals a player assisted while they were on the floor.
Yep.
It's better than total assists, in my opinion. And that just, it tells a lot of the story for me, and it tells a lot of the story on why the Kings are like, yeah, we'll take a flyer, but at a price. It's why the Warriors are like, brother, it's not going to work out here. And I go back to the discussion again that we had with Kenny the other day where Kuminga thinks he's on the same level as Scottie Barnes. And man, if he was Scottie Barnes, he would be playing a lot. And the reason he doesn't play a lot with Golden State is because he's just not that player.
Yeah.
And so you're banking on him coming to the Kings and reshaping, completely overhauling who he is as a basketball player.
Well, that and I mean, Scottie Barnes' usage rate was 27 last year, less than Kuminga. His assist rate was 27.7.
Yeah, man.
He's running the point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think we're not asking him to run the point. We're not asking Kuminga. What you have to do is you have to show that you're part of a team, not just a guy who shows up and gets his points and goes home, regardless of wins or losses.
The difference is, when you're getting your points, are you using that ability? Are you using that scoring ability? Because I do think he has elite scoring ability. The ability to get to the rack, get to the free throw line. You leave him open in the corner, he's gonna knock down a three. Like that, he's got a little mid-range game. He's just, you see him be a really, really effective scorer. And I think there's something to that. That matters. But how do you use that to make your teammates better?
Yeah.
We see the Warriors use Steph Curry's gravity. I know that's kind of a joke word with him now. But you see, just because Kuminga's on Golden State, the Warriors aren't the only team that does this, but since that's his team, you see them use Curry's gravity to get these little slip screens where Draymond gets a wide open layup that he may or may not make. But he gets a wide open layup because three guys followed Steph to the corner. It's like, can Kuminga, that next level for him is when he gets to the basket, he touches the paint, and three defenders collapse on him. Can he find Steph Curry, or in the Kings' case, Keegan Murray wide open in the corner for an open three? And that's, I think, to me, that next level. And that's, to me, what he was always missing a little bit with the Warriors was, okay, the ball is in my hands. How do I best help the team overall? In his mind, it was, I got to go put it in the hoop.
Yeah.
And sometimes, but that's not all the time. That can't be 82 games of that.
Well, that, especially if you're not an efficient scorer.
Yes.
Like, if you're an extremely efficient scorer, that's one thing. If, you know, you do force things and all that stuff. But, again, you've got to figure out a way to be efficient in what you're doing. And, like, even the fact that he doesn't hit the three ball, that impacts everybody around him. Like, the things like that. So, like, there are a ton of like, holes in his game that he has to show that he can overcome in order to become even the player that can start and play 30 minutes a night for a decent team, let alone become this star level player. So I'm still intrigued by him as a prospect, but there is this, like, there are so many question marks that I don't know he can answer, not in year one, but like over the course of time, and you're hoping that you're getting like a star level player.
Yeah.
But he has to understand what a star level player means.
That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. I want to talk more a little bit later on about the idea of impacting winning, because we've talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
In relation to specifically players on the Kings. And I just want to dive into, what does that even mean? Because I think we just say it. And I was thinking about it a lot last night, and I don't know if I can really define what it means. So let's talk about that, because you and I were texting a little bit last night, and it got me thinking. We'll talk about that, and we'll also get to why I think Josh Allen has ruined quarterback evaluation. And there's a really good example of it that I'm going to try really hard to tie back to the Kings, and I think I can. Before we pay some bills, though, I saw a thing that there's a bald off in Chicago.
Oh, no.
On August 24th.
Hmm.
You show up, and it's just going to be a bunch of bald people, and there's going to be a winner.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Does that mean you have, like the best just bald like head.
It might just be the best looking bald person. So I don't think I'm going to win in that contest.
Yeah.
Jeez. Could not say context. I don't think I would win that contest.
Okay.
But the idea of being just in a room full of bald people sounds like a great time for me.
That's amazing.
That's why I hang out with the sales staff.
All right.
I get John down there.
Oh, yeah.
Karosh.
Oh, yeah.
Got the bald homies in the office. I might go down to Chicago. I'm taking Venmos for flights in a hotel. So I can go to the bald off.
That's funny.
See how that goes. Get to the bald collective. I'll try and recruit Devin Carter while I'm there.
Oh, no. I don't think he's winning that contest either.
LeBron, Kevin Durant. Come on, guys. It's time. That's James.
Kyle's calling you home.
That's James and Kyle. Derek White's going to be there. Right here. Shout out to Derek White. He's James and Kyle with the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. I think Josh Allen has ruined quarterbacking in the NFL, and I'll tell you why next. We're the Insiders on ESPN 1320. Sacramento Sports Center. Sugar.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
He's James, I'm Kyle. It's Saturday, we've got so much play-by-play to bring you on this station.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we don't have live shows on Saturday, but we do have live play-by-play. So at 9:30 a.m., getting you rocking and rolling bright and early, coverage begins Red Sox at Yankees. That's a 9:30 a.m. So while you're driving around, getting your breakfast, getting your donuts, doing whatever you do on a Saturday morning, tap into ESPN 1320 and catch Red Sox and Yankees. And then later in the evening, if you're heading back from being out to dinner or whatever you got going on Saturday, 6:30 p.m. coverage begins. We got preseason football for you. It's the Raiders at the Arizona Cardinals in week three, the final week of the preseason. We've made it. Raiders Cardinals.
We've made it.
6:30 p.m. coverage begins. Hell yeah. On ESPN 1320. I think Josh Allen has ruined quarterback evaluating.
Oh, interesting.
So the Colts announced yesterday that Daniel Jones is going to be their starter. They brought in Daniel Jones to back up Anthony Richardson, or not back up Anthony Richardson, but to compete with Anthony Richardson. And they have decided that Daniel Jones is the winner of their quarterback competition. And Shane Steichen said said in his presser yesterday that it's a year-to-year league and he's worried about the 2025 Colts. He's not worried about the future, and that's why Daniel Jones, they think he's the better option right now to help them win than Anthony Richardson.
Okay.
Daniel Jones, 24-44-1 as a starter, 64% completion rate, 70 touchdown, 47 interceptions. A career 84.3 rating, 6.5 yards per attempt. He's never been higher than 6.8 yards per attempt. Very mid, just a very middle of the road quarterback.
Yes.
I don't think he's terrible. I don't think he's great. He's very average. And I think if you're a team that's trying to be competitive, as Shane Steichen says they're trying to be, I think Daniel Jones is a super uninspiring choice. But there's a bunch of layers to this, but I think one of them is just in regards to Anthony Richardson specifically. I feel like Josh Allen and his development as specifically as a passer from what he was at the University of Wyoming and what he is now as the MVP of the NFL, the leap he has made has been unbelievable, unprecedented. Something we may never see again. But he was very inaccurate at Wyoming. He was big. He was fast. He had a cannon. Sprayed the ball over the place. But you saw the talent. The Bills took a chance on him in the draft. They drafted Josh Allen in 2018. He was the number 7 overall pick. Completes 52.8% of his throws, 10 touchdowns, 12 picks in year one. Year two, 58.8% of his throws. That's not good.
No.
20 touchdowns, 9 picks. Like, okay, 3,089 yards. 85.3 rating. Okay, better but not great. But then in year three, 69.2 completion rate, 37 touchdowns, 10 picks. The next year, 63.3% completions, 36 touchdowns, 15 picks, and that's just kind of the way he's gone since then. His development is insane. And I think teams have talked themselves into Anthony Richardson Trey Lance. Those are the two names that come to mind first as, hey, these guys can just be Josh Allen. We can take these players, and in 2 years, they'll be Josh Allen. They're big, they're fast, they're strong, they have all the Josh Allen traits. They just gotta play. But the problem is, you bring in a Trey Lance, you bring in an Anthony Richardson, two guys who had not played a ton of football, but had all the skills to be awesome. And you bring them in, you have to let them play. But because of what Shane Steichen said, it is a year-to-year league. You cannot afford to say, Anthony Richardson, you're going to be the starting quarterback come hell or high water. We need to see you play. And part of this is Anthony Richardson's health issues. He's not been able to stay on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you draft this guy, he has not gotten consistent playing time. You're going into year three, and Shane Steichen is worried about Shane Steichen. Shane Steichen's trying to save his job.
Of course he is.
He's not worried about developing Anthony Richardson, which is fine. I understand. But if that's how you're going to approach this, if that's how your ownership group, your GM, is presenting this to you, like, hey, if you don't win, you're going to be out of here. Like, brother, you gave me Anthony Richardson.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not gotten to me a real shot to be the player that they think he's going to be. I don't think Trey Lance got that shot either with the 49ers. I understood it more with San Francisco because in 2022, the way Brock Purdy played, he was just better out the gate. And the Niners had a team they thought they could win now, and lo and behold, they went to overtime of the Super Bowl the second year of Purdy's career. But with the Colts, what are the Colts doing this year? What are the Colts doing that they need Daniel Jones to play instead of Anthony Richardson?
Yeah, I think so. You bring up Josh Allen, and I fully agree. But then I think like we can kind of separate a lot of NFL quarterbacks into these buckets, right? Mm-hmm. You have your Josh Allen type. Mm-hmm. And you know, to a I think a greater degree, Lamar Jackson. You have this type that they are as strong running the ball as they are throwing the ball, right? Mm-hmm. And when you compare Richardson to, it's not just Suskett, but look at Daniels in Washington.
Jaden Daniels, sure.
Yeah, he walks on the field and you're like, oh man, he gets it.
Yes.
He just fully gets it.
First preseason game, you saw it.
Yeah, so the problem that you have is that you have that type of player, and if that's the type of quarterback you go with, and he's not developing quickly like these other guys are, then you kind of, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater type deal. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other type of quarterback, the CJ Strouds, the, you know, you can put Brock Purdy in that. Mm-hmm. Guys who are more pocket passers, who can sling the ball all over the place, so they can do a bunch of timing routes and mm-hmm. like can, you know, manipulate a defense and start. Mm-hmm. And it's not all about their legs. It's about like literally picking you apart. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you don't have that either. That's not what Richardson is. So if you're going to be patient and let a guy develop, that's one thing. And that's what they should do. Like whatever happened to like letting guys develop, it does feel like you've got a year now, maybe two. Yeah. Where they're going to give you some sort of look, but then they're ready to pull the plug and go on to the next quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's absolutely crazy. Like how many quarterbacks have, you know, look at Sam Darnold, how mm-hmm. he just like basically gets run out of the league. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, and then he signs as a backup. And then next thing you know, he develops as a quarterback and becomes his numbers last season are absolutely bonkers. They're mm-hmm. like 4,500 yards and 37 really touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I think teams are too quick to pull the plug on quarterbacks now.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, you know, like the old Jerry Reynolds-ism, like if you have a 5-year plan in the NBA, you have mm-hmm. no plan at all.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is something to that, like at the NFL level.
Sure.
And guys lose their jobs, like general managers lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. A young quarterback's on the roster. That's not their guy anymore.
Yeah.
And they feel like, okay, we can switch, you know, go a different direction real quickly.
Yeah, I just, my thought on this, and I think you're absolutely right, but to me, if you're going to draft Anthony Richardson or you're going to draft Trey Lance, there needs to be some kind of commitment to, hey, this is a massive risk we're taking. Because Josh Allen is one of one from a development standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of that there. That was a football adage that like, hey, you can't teach accuracy. You cannot take an inaccurate quarterback and make him accurate. That's just not a thing that happens. But then it happened with Josh Allen, and Josh Allen's awesome, and the Bills are really good, and he's winning MVP, and he's like, I need that.
Yeah.
I want to find that. And that's fine, but what the Bills did was they gave Josh Allen the keys. They said, hey, here's what you need to get better at, and you're just going to play. But there needs to be an understanding for a guy like Shane Steichen that, hey, you're going to play Anthony Richardson here, and maybe Richardson has been so bad in practice. Maybe he's just been an abomination. He completed 47% of his passes last year. We'll round up to 48. 48% is really abominable. It's down from 59.5% in four games as a rookie.
Yeah.
So he took a dramatic step backward. Maybe he's just been so bad in camp, but if that's the case, then cut him. If you're really that out on him, then let him go try and figure it out elsewhere. But I think there needs to be an understanding with NFL teams that if you're going to take a flyer on a quarterback like that early in the draft, then your coach and GM need to be given the full runway to let that process play out. And if it fails, you can't then fire them. To me, anyway.
I think you can fire the GM who made the pick, but it's tough with the coach.
Yeah, I would hope that the coach has some say in that, though, right?
Yeah.
You as the GM and the coach need to be on the same page of, all right, we think this guy can develop. And if he doesn't, there has to be an understanding that just because Trey Lance or Anthony Richardson has not become Josh Allen, that's not a failure of them or the organization. That is just football how it's always been. And then Josh Allen happened, and everybody went, oh, you can teach accuracy. Like, no, one guy did it.
Well, I would say two, because I'm going to put Lamar Jackson in the same, because Lamar was known as an inaccurate passer the last 2 years, 67% and 66.7.
Lamar.
And again, watching a guy go from just straight up a runner and to a guy who last season put up 4,172 passing yards and 41 passing touchdowns and only four picks.
Sure.
That to me is crazy when you look at him as a young player. You know, again, sure, he played in 16 games as a rookie and 1,200 yards, six touchdowns, three picks. I think there are ways in which this happens where guys do develop, but you have to give them not only an opportunity, but you have to have an offensive line. You have to have a running back that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You have to have receivers that they can actually, you know, support them in the right way. Yeah. And I feel like so many franchises at the NFL level, they're just not ready to support a young quarterback in the right way.
Yeah, man. It is. I feel bad for guys like Richardson and Lance, because I don't know that, like, if Trey Lance had just been given the keys in San Francisco, I don't know that he would be an All-Pro right now. If Anthony Richardson had been given the keys this year in Indy, I'm not saying he would be an All-Pro this year. But I do think that those two guys specifically got put in tough spots because teams were looking at Josh Allen, looking, as you bring up, Lamar Jackson, and going, oh, just be that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily fair to put on a player. But anyways,
I'm with you.
James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We'll talk more NFL. We got some fun stuff from our friends over at the AP, who talked about the NFL players under the most pressure this season. We'll get to that. But I want to get to the idea of impacting winning. We have talked so much about this as it pertains to various players on the Kings, and I want to discuss exactly what that means. What does it mean to impact winning, and what are we looking for when we talk about that with a player? He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And this is ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Hitter.